Today on Family Talk.
Many people look at the results of the 2016 election and believe the appointment of Donald Trump was a fluke. However, his supporters believe divine intervention provided America with a reprieve from a bleak future. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. Today on the program, Dr. Dobson will sit down with author and journalist Stephen Strang to dive into his new book, God and Donald Trump. Stephen will explain how he believes God raised up Donald Trump to turn our nation back to its godly roots. But before we get into our interview today, I want to remind you that now through the end of December, we have been given a generous matching grant. It's a great time to partner with us here at Family Talk because every dollar you donate will be doubled. That's right. If you donate $50, it will become $100, and $100 will become $200, and so on. If you're able to support us, go to drjamesdobson.org and give securely online. Or if you prefer, you can call toll-free at 877-732-6825 and make your donation over the phone. Thanks so much for your prayers and your financial support. Okay, let's listen now to part one of God's Hand on America. Is God using President Trump? Right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
You know, I've said on multiple occasions that the 2016 election here in the United States, presidential election particularly, may have been the most critical crossroads for our country. It's certainly one of them. If Hillary Clinton had won on that late Tuesday night on November the 8th, 2016, it would have been cataclysmic for our nation, in my opinion. And it would certainly have been devastating for the followers of Christ. I don't think they ever would have recovered as a nation. Certainly, the nation as a whole would have been affected dramatically. Abortion laws would have become universal, and our tax dollars would have continued to fund this horrific procedure. Rights for the LGBT community would have overridden the religious liberties of Christians, those that share a reverence not only for the Scripture, but for the Constitution. All of that, I believe, would have been snuffed out. And we were on a crossroads. Pornography and the extreme violence that's related to it would have been more prevalent in our culture than it has ever been. And our country would have been significantly weakened economically, and our place as a superpower around the world would have been diminished. Most importantly, and the reason for the way I cast my vote, is the Supreme Court would have shifted to the left, which I believe it would never, or certainly not for 25 or more years, have recovered from. I wholeheartedly believe that America was given a reprieve with the election of Donald Trump. For the first time in decades, there has been a president in the White House who has been actively fighting for our constitutional beliefs. Now, let me tell you, since that election, I have been there. I've been to the White House a number of times, and I may even make reference to it in the program that is to come. I have seen this president. I know what he's trying to do, and I know why he is trying to do it. And if Christians understood that, they might feel differently than they do now, some of them at least, about what's going on in the nation's capital. Now, today we're going to talk about the election of Donald Trump and what his administration is doing now to stand up for Christian beliefs with Stephen Strang, who is the CEO and founder of Charisma Magazine and other magazines. And he founded an organization called Charisma. He also hosts a podcast called the Strang Report, which discusses the most important subject matter to Christians around the globe. His new book, and what we're going to talk about today, is entitled God and Donald Trump. First of all, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here. You and I have been friends for, how long have we known each other, 35 years?
Well, I would have been aware of you long before you knew who I was, but going all the way back to the 1980s.
I know that at the end, you were supporting Donald Trump, as was I. But I didn't support him in the beginning. I was supporting Ted Cruz. And until he kind of flamed out, I had a chance to look at who was left and who I didn't want to be president. I've already explained that. What is your journey along that line?
Well, it's similar to yours because I was also a Ted Cruz supporter, and I would have preferred Mike Huckabee, Senator Marco Rubio from my own state of Florida, or a number of other people before Donald Trump. To me, I only knew him from the media. I thought of him as a kind of a playboy billionaire who was on, had a reality TV show. He, not exactly my idea of a president. And I expected, as many people did, that he would flame out, that he would say one more thing, he would tweet one more thing that was just over the pale, and that just ended his political career. Of course, that did not happen at all. And I got on the Trump train in May before the election, had an opportunity to interview him and to be involved, you know, not in a significant way, but aware of what was going on, particularly in the Christian community, kind of behind the scenes. And I just felt that that needed to be sort of documented almost for history from a Christian perspective instead of just a secular perspective that nearly all of the other Donald Trump books have.
You know, a couple of days after he was elected, I wrote something somewhere. I said it. I don't remember. This man, Donald Trump, is not a perfect man. He is going to disappoint us at some stages of the game, and we should expect it. It's going to happen. But consider the alternatives. And besides that, he is a lot closer to a lot of things we believe than we have thought. And some of my opposition to him was in error. And so I tried to make that up at the end.
Well, I think that a lot of people misread him. And as we got to know the real Donald Trump, who I found when I met him and interviewed him, that he was actually quite humble, not at all like you see in the media. And he was totally engaged with giving me thoughtful answers. But as a person, I saw him in a different light. And since then, I've talked to other Christian leaders, such as yourself, who have seen this side of Donald Trump, which is does not come out in the media.
As a matter of fact, I think the turning point occurred in New York City at the Marriott Hotel. At an event, there were 1,000 evangelical leaders there, nearly all of them pastors. I'm not one, but nearly all of those who were there were in the church responsibility. And I was asked the first question, and I asked him about religious liberty. When that day was over, I think the vast majority of that large crowd was saying to himself, I could vote for him. I think what we saw there gave us permission to vote for somebody that we knew was not probably a born-again Christian. Now, only God knows. He claims to be deeply committed to Christ, and I believe that. I believe that. I've seen him up close and personal. I've heard him speak, and I was there on that day. And who knows? God knows. But he is certainly trying to do the things that would please us. I can tell you that.
One of the things I document in the book is his background, his family, how he grew up. In fact, in the interview I had with him, I even asked him about some of these things. I asked him, what is the most important thing in your life? Now, that was my invitation to him to say, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
He didn't say that. He said that family was most important, but he said faith is right up there close to it. Yeah. And so I thought, for where he is, that was probably pretty good. But if you get to know his story, about 10 years ago, something happened. You know, he was getting a little older. He was thinking, you know, what have I really accomplished? Of course, he's wealthy beyond this description. And he started watching Christian TV. And as he met with different Christian leaders who he had not met, he was familiar with a lot of them. He would say things to let them know that he had watched their programs. One story that I was told is that he and Melania went to a David Jeremiah crusade in New York City and sat on the front row and then greeted him afterwards and said, oh, we watch your show all the time. So these are things that you don't necessarily know about Donald Trump that I tried to bring out in the book and to show that there was somehow a spiritual aspect to all this. But I'll mention one other thing. Some of the early supporters of Donald Trump were not all the evangelical leaders that you would name if you were naming all the influential people. A lot of them were Pentecostals and Charismatics, and a lot of them got to know him through Paula White Cain. In 2012, he called Paula, who he had known for a number of years. And in fact, I knew Paula back in the early 2000s, and she told us a story that her secretary came in one day and said, Donald Trump is on the line and wants to talk to you. And she thought, what for? And so she talked to him, and he said, I watch you on TV all the time. And he invited her up to Trump Tower, and it kind of became a friendship. So in 2012, he was thinking of running, and he called up Paula and said, I want you to bring together some of your friends who really know how to pray. He said, I'm not asking for their endorsement. I want them to pray. Is it right for me to run for president? And of course, we know that he didn't run. But then in 2016, when he did run, he called Paula again and started meeting with people. And some of these meetings have been on YouTube. In fact, I've seen them. I was not in the meetings. And afterwards, they would gather around and lay hands on him and pray these very fervent prayers over him. And when I saw this, I was shocked because I've been around a lot of politicians, even George W. Bush, who is well known as an evangelical. You couldn't imagine him submitting to that kind of prayer. Yet Donald Trump seemed to enjoy it. And I think that these pastors who were actually around him began to conclude the same thing that you did in June at that big meeting. I did not happen to attend the meeting because I had a prior engagement, and I was already on the Trump train at that point. But I agree with you that that was an absolutely pivotal meeting. I talk about it in the book, God and Donald Trump, and even quote some of the things that you said at that meeting. And after that, there was a shift in the evangelical community. There were a few never Trumpers. I write about them too in the book. And, you know, Donald Trump is not perfect. In fact, in the book, I'm careful not to make him look like a saint. And it is not an apologetic for Donald Trump. What I'm trying to do is to bring in the spiritual aspect and ask some questions that are not normally asked. I like to say that the book is as much about God as it is about Donald Trump.
You know, I was invited to a dinner at the White House. I think it was the night before the National Day of Prayer. And there were, as I recall, 29 pastors or religious leaders there. And I was in that assembly. And at the end of the meal, he turned to us and made some comments. And one of the things he said was, I want you to know, I would not be in this house if it were not for you evangelicals and charismatics, and also as deeply committed Catholics. There were some Catholics there. He said, I'm here because of your support. And indeed, 81% of evangelicals voted for that man. Who would have believed that 6 months earlier?
My book actually says it was 82%, but who's counting? It was significant. And, you know, to me, my feeling was like you. What is the alternative? It would have been horrible beyond description. Yet I believe that God raised this man up. And in fact, people have asked me, why did I write the book, God and Donald Trump? And I tell them that Hillary Clinton wrote a book called What Happened? And my book answers the question. And that answer is that God intervened and God answered the prayers of sincere Christians who are just praying that the Lord would raise up somebody, the Lord would do something to try to shift this country. And so God raised up somebody that we didn't expect, somebody we didn't even necessarily like. He's imperfect, but so are a lot of famous leaders and
biblical leaders. I mean, Cyrus let the Jews go from Babylon and help them rebuild the wall. Cyrus was a Persian. He was not a believer of any sort, and yet God used him for his purposes.
And in Isaiah, it says that God says to Cyrus, I have called you even though you have not known me. And so it shows that God could call someone who didn't even wasn't even necessarily a believer. And when that was pointed out, and there were a number of leaders that brought it up, Lance Wallnau was the one that I remember the most, I thought, you know what? I can support someone like Donald Trump. If God can use Cyrus, he can use Donald Trump.
Or David. David killed a woman's husband. And yet, even after that, he was called a man after God's own heart. And God does things in ways that we don't understand sometimes. And sometimes he uses those that don't know him, who haven't felt called by his name. And I think that happened in this case. And some good things are happening since. I wanted to ask you, you know, there were three debates between Hillary and Donald Trump. Did you happen to see the third one, the last one?
I saw all three of them.
Were you as shocked as I was when Hillary described a partial birth abortion, an unanesthetized baby penetrated with a cannula that sucked the brains out of that child and delivered a dead baby? She didn't say all that, but that's what she was talking about. And I stood there and said, surely the American people will notice and understand what she's talking about.
And did you also notice that Donald Trump said that under his administration that Roe v. Wade would be reversed?
Right there. He made that very clear what
and
he's going
nobody,
to stand for.
What politicians ever said that?
I think that lost the election for her. You know, she's got all kinds of reasons for why she was not elected. That moment took my breath away, and I can't help but believe there were tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people who voted differently because of what she said on that night.
I agree with you that that night was pivotal in lots of ways. And Sam Rodriguez, who's my friend who prayed at the inauguration, he told me that some of his Hispanic leaders were texting him during the debate and saying, her saying that about abortion, I can't vote for her. That was a tipping point. And I talk about blacks and Hispanics who the media all had a narrative. They were all for Hillary. They were in her pocket. And demographically and traditionally, that's been the case. But the ones who believe in Jesus, they switched. And Sammy Rodriguez told me that to him, the one thing was the Supreme Court. That was the main thing to him, even more important than immigration. So even though these people did not support the agenda of Hillary Clinton, and most of them did not support open borders, they just didn't want their parishioners and people that they knew to be sent back to Mexico. Now, as we found out, Donald Trump is nowhere near as bad as people feared. And I believe that something good will come out of all this, that we will get a policy that allows and welcomes people into our country. You may remember that he said that he was going to build the wall, and right in the middle, he was going to put a great big door to welcome people if they come in the right way.
He also said about that wall that Mexico was going to pay the bill for it. I haven't heard a word about that. So, like we said, he's not a perfect man. But he's doing a lot of really good things. And I think, and I wonder if you agree, Stephen, that there are a lot of people out there who have been influenced by the media and influenced by the fake media, if you will, into believing things about him that are not true. And they are still confused about him. And a lot of them are really angry at him. If you saw him up close and personal, you might have a different view. I can tell you that I have a different view, having been there.
Well, you're right. We're all shaped to some extent by what we see and hear in the media. That's how we find out what's going on in the world.
Stephen, we are recording this program just a little bit early, and I'm only a few days away from an event that's taking place at the White House, and it is a mental health conference that is going to be held. I think about 75 mental health professionals are going to be there, and I'm going to be among them. And they have seven subjects that are going to be talked about. This could be almost a list for me of things I've fought for and against. Here they are. Pornography. My goodness, I was on the pornography commission in the 1980s trying to fight that wretched stuff. Childhood obesity, the opiate addiction that's sweeping the nation, the state of the family, prison reform, teen suicide, and then things related to the military having to do with PTSD and what's been done to the chaplaincy in the military to weaken it. Those are the subjects that we're going to be talking about there. And I don't know, we're probably going to break up into groups because that's too much to talk about. But look at the agenda here. Look at what the Trump presidency is focusing on. These are issues of moral significance throughout the country. And think about what I just said and whether or not those are issues that you would like to see the president of the United States behind.
And it's amazing that he has done this voluntarily. There's been nobody forcing him to do this. And earlier administrations, even the ones that were more friendly to our point of view, did not embrace these things. But Donald Trump seems to get it. Imperfect, irreligious man that he is, he seems to get it. And I'll give you an example from my book, God and Donald Trump. He was meeting with a group of pastors. I was not there, but one of the pastors who was there reported this to me. And he asked them for their support. And they all kind of looked at the floor. And he's saying, what's wrong? And they said, we can't support you. Well, why not? It's illegal. And they were referring, of course, to the Johnson Amendment, which kind of muzzles churches and nonprofits. Only one church has ever lost their nonprofit status over it, yet it's this big bugaboo that everyone's afraid of.
They're hiding behind it, mostly.
And you know what? That's sadly, that's true. And right then and there, he said, that's wrong. That needs to change. And he has mentioned it numerous times. In my lifetime, I don't even remember a politician mentioning it, let alone saying we need to do something about it. And he's already done something about it in the sense that he has issued some executive orders. And I think that they're going to try to get a law passed in Congress that would do away from this thing that's really muzzling a whole segment of the American population, the ones that are more conservative.
So here's another example of good things that the president is doing and is working on. I believe if we give him time, there'll be a lot more of these successes in areas that, frankly, we care an awful lot about.
Well, my book is not an apologetic for Donald Trump at all. And I don't make him look like a holy man, which he isn't. But I believe that people are going to be surprised about Donald Trump. I mean, I believe he's going to go down as one of our great presidents because he's had the boldness to address some of these things. I mean, who's talked about draining the swamp before? And look at what's happened with the economy, with the stock market and so forth since he's been in. I think that these are is foreshadowing of things to come. And I believe that after a while, people are just going to get tired of this constant barrage of negativity about Donald Trump. But really, when they attack Donald Trump, they're attacking all of us who kind of believe the same way. It's just they can't attack all of us, but they can attack him. There are a lot of people that would like us to go away. And what you mentioned about President Obama and his administration, that was just the tip of the iceberg. You know, those were just some of the early indicators of what would have come if Hillary had been elected.
You've been listening to Family Talk and the first part of Dr. James Dobson's interview with author and media mogul Stephen Strang. If you're interested in reading Stephen's book, God and Donald Trump, head to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. There you'll find a link and more information about his company, Charisma Media, and also how you can receive a copy of the book as well. Again, go to drjamesdobson.org and click onto our broadcast page. Did you know that Family Talk has a listener feedback line where you can leave your thoughts and opinions about our programs? Call toll-free 844-823-2669. Your testimonies, comments, and sentiments are greatly appreciated. Again, the number to call for our listener line is 844-823-2669. We appreciate your support of our ministry, and thank you for listening to today's program. Be sure to catch the rest of our interview with Stephen Strang tomorrow on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, wishing you a great rest of your day.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, Dr. Tim Clinton for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Hey, right now, grab your cell phone, go to your app store, and click on the Dr. James Dobson Family Talk app. Download it right now, and you can start listening anywhere at any time. 24/7, 365.